Well, first of all, it's great to be here. And I'm very proud of what Steve King has done in bringing this together. And I'm very proud of what Steve King is doing in Washington to defund and stop Obamacare, where he is playing a major leadership role. So I'm delighted to be back. I hope all of you will reinforce for Steve today that what he is doing is really important, because we have to draw the line in the sand this year, and we have to stop Obamacare from being implemented this year. This is a major step towards a Washington-controlled, bureaucratically defined America in which some bureaucrat tells you what you can do. And if you go to healthtransformation.net at the Center for Health Transformation, which I helped establish, you will see that there's a big, big poster. It's a 50-square-foot poster you can get, or you can download it for free, which has the 1,968 specific grants of power to the Secretary of Health and Human Services and other Washington bureaucrats in Obamacare. And you just look at that list and you say to yourself, is there anybody in this room who honestly believes that the federal bureaucracy can implement that level of detailed control over your health care, including, for example, that the Secretary of Health and Human Services shall define the characteristics of measuring your teeth for oral care? I recently spoke with orthodontist, and I said to him, how many of you believe that Secretary Sebelius has the knowledge to define the tooth coverage of oral care? And they just broke up laughing. But it's not a laughing matter. And Steve King understands that, and he is really bringing pressure to bear and turning up the heat in Washington. And I hope all of you will encourage him to continue doing that and will encourage the rest of your delegation to listen to him and to follow his leadership on this very important issue. Calista and I are delighted to be back here and have a chance to be with you. She went to Luther College, so she spent 4 years getting to know Iowa winters better. But since she's from western Wisconsin, she actually thought of it as going south for the winter. I'm very optimistic. I believe that in 2012, we could win a historic election, and we could end the 80-year dominance of the left and fundamentally recenter this country back into a center-right government reflecting the core values of the American people. I think there are three large topics on which we can recenter America. The first is values, because this is truly a center-right country, not a left-wing country. The second is the economy, because this is a country that favors jobs, paychecks, and economic growth. And the third is national security. Let me briefly describe why I believe this is true. Gallup, about 2 months ago, asked the question, do you believe that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence make America an exceptional country, or do you believe we're a normal country? By 80 to 18, the American people said we're an exceptional country. The problem is the 18 includes many of our politicians, many of our bureaucrats, many of our judges, much of our news media, and many of our tenured faculty. And so the fight we're in, where frankly we outnumber them better than 4-1, the fight we're in is to say, you know, we actually mean it. And to say, for example, that every class, K through 12, and every tax-paid college and university should teach the Declaration of Independence, and I don't care what the ACLU says, they should teach it accurately, and they should explain what the Founding Fathers meant by saying we hold these truths, not philosophy, not culture, not ideology. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that we're all created equal, and that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Some people may tell you that we should stay away from values and stay away from social issues. I'm here to tell you, if you don't start with values and you don't start by establishing who we are as Americans, the rest of it doesn't matter. Life is not just about money. But second, we have to talk about the economy, and partly as a matter of values. America works when Americans are working. America works when you have a chance to go out and provide for your own family, not rely on the government. I don't want to redistribute wealth. I want to create wealth so that every American has a chance to have a better future and have a happy time, because they're being productive, they're engaged in useful work, they're doing something that's meaningful to them. And that means we've got to get this economy growing again, and that means that we have to focus on cutting spending in Washington, getting power back out of Washington, controlling the bureaucrats who are trying to control us, and making it desirable and successful to invest and create jobs in America so that we can have a better future. The president in Brazil got it exactly backwards. You know, he goes to Brazil, President Obama goes to Brazil and says to the Brazilians, I'm glad you are drilling for oil offshore. And then he says, I hope we can be your customer. That's exactly backwards. I want us to create American energy in America, and I want Brazilians to be our customers. You know, the Obama economic model is borrow money from the Chinese to give it to the Brazilians. Our model ought to be invest in America, create American jobs, once again be the most prosperous and creative country in the world, buy back all of our debt from the Chinese, lend the Chinese money, and sell to the Brazilians. It's the exact opposite of Obama. I would say that if Reaganomics was the path to prosperity, Obamanomics is the path to depression. And I think we need to repeal Obamanomics by repealing Obama. It's pretty straightforward. I helped balance the federal budget for 4 straight years, the only time in your lifetime we had 4 years of a balanced budget. We paid over $400 billion in federal debt off, and we had a very simple model, the opposite of the Washington mindset. First of all, and this shocks so many people in Washington, we quit spending. It's amazing how much faster you get to a balanced budget if you quit spending. We had the slowest rate of increase in modern times. The 4 years I was speaker, we averaged 2.9% a year increase, including all the entitlements. And we didn't raise taxes, we cut taxes. We had the largest capital gains tax cut in American history, and the reason was simple. We wanted to put people back to work, so we designed tax cuts that made it profitable to go out and create businesses. Unemployment went down from 5.4% to 4%. And if you want to balance this federal budget, the number one thing you could do is get the economy growing so fast that you were back down at 4% unemployment. That additional 6.5% of the American people going back to work, because I think the true unemployment rate is around 10.5 if you count folks who quit looking. If you got all 6.5% of the American people back to work, so they weren't getting food stamps, they weren't getting unemployment, they weren't getting Medicaid, they actually had a job and were paying taxes, the difference in spending and revenue in that one fact is the number one step back to a balanced budget. And then you got to control spending, reform the entitlements, and frankly, there are things you want the government to quit doing. I mean, if you look at the total failure of the Department of Energy, you can make a reasonably good case that we could probably disband 2/3 of the Department of Energy, and we would have more energy as a result. Third, we have to focus on a serious conversation about national security. Now, I've gotten all sorts of articles last week saying Gingrich was one way or the other about Libya. Well, the fact is, on each day that I was on television, I was responding to where the president was that day. And so obviously there were contradictions, because one day he's over here and I comment on being over here, another day he's over here and you comment on being over here, and they say, wow, Gingrich is commenting both ways. That's true. I was trying to follow Obama. But let me tell you the consistency. If you had asked me, should we jump in the lake, I would have said no. Once we jump in the lake, I say swim as fast as you can. Now, there's not a contradiction between saying let's stay dry and swim as fast as you can if the intervening moment is you're in the lake. The president on March 3rd said Gaddafi has to go. At that point, he pitted the prestige and power of the United States against a dictator who's been anti-American for over 40 years. Now, I believe the only rational objective of the current intervention is to defeat Gaddafi as rapidly as possible. I would do it by using Egyptian, Moroccan, Jordanian, and Iraqi ground forces as advisors and as air controllers with the rebels, using all of Western air power as decisively as possible. You know, Secretary Gates was explaining that a no-fly zone doesn't just mean killing airplanes, so if you're killing tanks, it's because it's a no-fly zone. I have to tell all of you, I think this is linguistically so stupid. I have never seen a flying tank. I mean, if what they wanted to do was create a suppression zone for the purpose of defeating the Libyan military, then be honest and say this is what we're doing. Because it's a totally different process. I happen to favor, once you get involved, I believe you get involved decisively, you win quickly, you minimize casualties, you get it over with, and you say publicly, we're getting rid of Gaddafi because you want Gaddafi's military to get up every morning and see a clear, simple message. He's gone. Do you want to go with him? But if you're the Libyan military, and you're standing there going, I don't know if the Americans are serious or not serious. I don't know if we can hold out or not hold out. I mean, you know, you watch our State Department, our Defense Department, and our White House argue before they even get to argue with our allies. They're arguing with each other. I'll say two other things about foreign policy. If we have to risk the lives of young Americans, we have to have the courage to tell the truth about who's trying to kill us. It is not a random behavior. It is radical Islamists who are motivated by a deep belief in replacing our civilization. And we need a commander-in-chief with the courage to tell the truth, not a spectator-in-chief who's confused about whether his job is kicking a soccer ball or leading the United States. Yeah. Lastly, on national security. I'm a historian. Now, the president was the editor of the Harvard Law Review. He's obviously a really smart lawyer. I listened to him explain his authorities, and he explained that the United Nations, the Arab League, I went back because as a historian, I didn't remember this. Calista and I have made some movies about American history, and we were recently up at Independence Hall where the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were written. But I went back to check. You can do this with your own copy of the Constitution. I couldn't find Arab League anywhere in the Constitution. I found Congress. I found the idea that the president might consult with the United States Congress. But to say to us Americans, he's relying on a collection of dictators called the Arab League and a corrupt institution called the United Nations, and by the way, he didn't quite get around to consulting the U.S. Congress, that is a fundamentally false model of American government. People ask, how quick could you start turning things around? And we were working on a project called On the First Day. Imagine that on the first day, after the inaugural, all of you who watched inaugurations know, the president goes inside to have lunch with the congressional leadership after the inaugural speech. What if there was a one-hour break? And the president went into a room in the Capitol and signed executive orders that had already been discussed, they were already on the internet. They'd already been drafted technically by veterans from the Reagan and Bush administrations. I'll give you a couple examples. You could do this literally in minutes to begin turning the government around. I'm just going to give you four quick examples. The first executive order might be to abolish every czar in the White House as of that minute. The second executive order might well be to reimpose Ronald Reagan's Mexico City policy and abolish any federal money going anywhere in the world to pay for abortion. The third executive order might well be to reinstitute George W. Bush's policy on enforcing that you have a right of conscience and no government can force you to perform an abortion or other action against your religious beliefs. A fourth executive order might well say to the State Department, you will allow countries to designate their own capital, and we will cite the United States Embassy in whatever capital that country designates. The only country in the world where the United States refuses to allow the country to define its own capital is the democracy of Israel, and it is profoundly wrong to discriminate against the Israeli government's right to designate its own capital. Now, imagine that during a campaign all next year, there was a website called On the Very First Day, and people could submit their ideas. What executive orders do you like? Remember, you can issue an executive order as long as it's within the legal framework passed by the Congress and signed by the President. You have enormous capacity to direct things and to say, do this, don't do that, focus on this, don't focus on that. Imagine that all during the year, citizens found things that ought to be fixed. And we put them on the web, so it's not secret. And then we had smart people evaluate it and say, well, this one's not quite ready yet. This one's perfect. And so imagine that by next October of 2012, you had, say, 200 executive orders that smart people all over the country had come up with. And they were actually technically written. And so on inaugural day, you just had to print them all out. And everybody'd know what was coming. Because it would all be transparent. It would be the sort of thing Obama promised and didn't deliver on, you know? You could even allow C-SPAN in the room to cover you signing the executive orders. And you could post on the internet, done, done. Some of you remember when I was speaker, I used to get up every day and I would check off as we did the things in the contract. My only point is this. There is a huge difference between Obama and the left and 80% of the American people. We can turn it around with remarkable speed if we have courage. And your coming here today and helping Steve King is a first step towards that kind of courage. Thank you all very, very much.